The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. Welcome to The Money Show. We're going to chat to a man who has labelled Capitex the world's best bank. Michael Lafferty joins us. He's in studio tonight. We'll talk to him in just a moment. Also, tonight's market commentator, Garth Curry. I'll leave it up to him to explain how it is that the FTSE 100 has had its best week since 2011 this week, up something like 7.2%, courtesy of a dramatically weaker pound. At one stage today, around 19.27 to the pound, we haven't seen these levels for the rand against the pound in very nearly 12 months. It's been an horrific 12 months for the South African currency. Now that there is huge uncertainty caused by the Brexit vote last Thursday, the results came out on Friday. We saw the big sell-off on markets on Friday and on Monday. That huge uncertainty, the threat of it pushing the UK into recession, the uncertainty that's causing the US Fed to take its foot off the interest rate accelerator, all of these factors do matter when it comes to South Africa, and also the slightly better exchange rate should help us when it comes to issues of inflation, for example, and interest rates. We're waiting with bated breath, and there are those of you who are waiting with us to find out what next Wednesday's petrol price change will be. I suspect that the petrol price will go up. It'll go up by a couple of cents. The strength we've seen in the rand in the last couple of days is probably too little too late to make any significant difference to the petrol price. With oil at $50 a barrel and the rand at about $16.50 to the US dollar, we're not going to see any big cuts. But unless the fuel guys have got a little bit of courage, maybe they'll give us the benefit of the doubt on that particular front. But we'll see. Very often it comes out on a Friday night between 6 and 7, the announcement from the National Energy Fund. But it has, in recent times, been a little bit delayed. So we'll keep an eye on that. If it comes out in the next 45 minutes or so, we'll be sure to share it with you. Plus, we've got the brutal biz quiz this evening. If you see any biz quiz imitators, treat them with the scorn they deserve. There is only one biz quiz. We've got 2,000 rand up for grabs, courtesy of MTN Business. Plus, we'll bring you the very best bits of The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield.
Welcome to The Money Show, and it's a great pleasure to welcome to studio Michael Lafferty, founder and chairman of The Lafferty Group, which this year named Capitec best bank in the world. What gives you, Michael Lafferty, the authority to make such a dramatic pronouncement? There must be 6,000 banks in the world, and you decided Capitec's the very best.
Hi, Bruce. I'm a great fan of your show, by the way.
Well, that's very kind of you. Capitec's a great fan of your bank rating.
Well, we had no idea which bank was going to, you know, turn out where in the ratings. First of all, we looked at quoted banks only, and we looked at 100 of the largest quoted banks in the world. That was our first bunch of ratings. We have since moved on to look at another 100 European quoted banks. So it's within that context that I'm talking. So first of all, Capitec is the only bank in around about 250 banks that we have rated so far, and these are the largest banks in the world that scores a 5-star rating. But coming along quite quickly behind, we have Barclays Africa. And in fact, the South African banks as a whole, we looked at the big five South African banks. When you look at it on a country basis, they actually have the highest country score of around about, I think it's 35 countries.
What makes South African banks, in your mind, good? Because I'm about to be deluged with people saying that this Michael Lafferty guy is mad. Does he know what banks charge in South Africa? Does he understand the headaches we face? Does he understand the... because people generally dislike their banks. They dislike the service they proffer. They dislike the fact that they have to pay for that service. How do you judge what is good in this environment?
Okay. So we use 15 different criteria. Half of them are financial criteria, financial ratios, things like capital ratio, the equity capital ratio, liquidity, the extent of deposit funding, and stuff like that on the financial side. We also then, on the qualitative side, we look at the strategy, we look at culture, we look at customer loyalty, We look at whether the bank is living up to its brand promise, etc., etc. And we take all of that information from the annual report, which of course is the statement of management, of bank management. When we reinterpret it within our ratings matrix, and we got the matrix by going out and talking to, on the one hand, bankers, senior bankers, on the other hand, regulators, and on the third hand, to investors. And amazingly, we found that there was general agreement on the criteria one should use to measure quality. And by quality, we mean the ability of a bank to generate sustainable returns over the medium to long term.
Now, that's a crucial question, sustainable returns, because Capitec, and you will know as well as anybody else, that Capitec is essentially a microlender. It has a retail bank offering, but most of its profits come out of charging poorer customers very high interest rates. And one of the comments that is coming through on the SMS line this evening, on the text line, as you might call it, has Lafferty put the kiss of death on Capitec's asset quality. There will be a problem there, as there was with African Bank. Don't kid yourself. And Capitec's got a fundamentally different model and a different way of judging credit worthiness of its customers, which is why I think it survived. But what's your response to that?
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with providing banking services to poor people. In fact, I think it's a laudable activity. In fact, I actually think that every bank in the world should have a responsibility towards inclusion, towards serving all of the citizens in the community. The great strength that Capitec has is its focus. It's focused entirely on the personal sector. Another part of that is its simplicity. It has this famous one account. I think they call it the Global One Account. And if you read the annual report, it's almost it's almost a perfect statement of how a bank, what a bank strategy should be, how a bank should be run. And I have to say that you'll find very, very similar things also in, for example, the Barclays Africa annual report.
Now, when you look at the model that Capitec has chosen to follow, are there similar banks elsewhere in the world that are doing well?
Yes, yes, there are. But what's amazing is that there was a bank in Germany, and the bank still exists. But this bank was created after the Second World War. It was called KKB, Kunden Credit Bank, and it had exactly the model that Capitec is using. And it was extraordinarily successful. And eventually, the founder, who was actually the son of the original founder, retired. He sold the bank to Citibank. Citibank was smart enough to keep it separate, didn't integrate it into its global consumer bank. So the philosophies were the same. Customer focused. Don't get away from products. Focus on the only thing that matters, which is the customer relationship. And of course, yeah, fees were high, et cetera, et cetera. But the taxi driver, the lady who picked me up from Johannesburg Airport yesterday, I asked her, who do you bank with? It was Capitec. And what do you like about them? Simple. And I only have to pay one fee. I think she said €5 a month. It's fantastic. And then she went on to tell me about all the problems she had with one or two other banks.
Now, but that's the point. I mean, John in Bryanston, you've got a question this evening for Michael Lafferty. Hello.
Hello, Bruce. I was wondering whether I heard correctly, but when I heard the criteria that Michael put out there, I didn't hear him including customer experience or customer satisfaction as one of his criteria.
Very good point, John. Is it possible to objectively include that, Michael, when you consider something like bank quality?
Well, yes, it is. In fact, I did say that we include customer loyalty. So customer loyalty, customer satisfaction. And in fact, what we say is the bank should disclose the level of customer satisfaction in its annual report, and this should be measured by a credible, independent third party. And actually, all of the South African banks do this, and they're miles ahead of banks in most other countries.
What makes the South African banking sector particularly good to your mind?
Well, I think there's something fundamental here in South Africa. So between us, we can speculate about what it is. Things that strike me are the sort of there's a very high level of integrity. Banking has suffered from appalling behavior in countries like the UK and the US and Ireland and so on and so forth. You don't see anything like this in South Africa. I think the banks talk about serving people in a very down-to-earth, humanistic way. I think they're very focused. They see great potential for the retail market in the future. Not, of course, not least in it, not only in South Africa, but across Africa. But there are. I think it's somebody should look into why is it that South Africa produces so many industries which are world class, and banking is one of them.
The regulatory regime is held up as one of the best in the world. I mean, our bank regulators housed in the Reserve Bank are ferocious individuals and historically have been ferocious individuals. The very powerful chief executives of South Africa's banking sector do build up a sweat when they have to pop up to the Reserve Bank to go and see their regulator. That's probably the bottom line here.
Well, I think it's one of the factors, but there's one very special thing that hasn't happened in South Africa that has happened and has destroyed much of, for example, British banking, and that is the phenomenon of universal banking. For the last 20, 25 years, we've seen really the securities market, which we call investment banking today, merged with commercial banking, and that has done incredible damage to banks like Barclays, to banks like Royal Bank of Scotland, to banks like Deutsche Bank, to banks like Citibank, etc., etc. These two industries should never have been allowed to come together, and I think we're now in the process gradually of separating them. South Africa didn't have that phenomenon, and investment banking in South Africa is very much a smaller part of the activities of the South African banks, and where they have them, for example, in the case of First Rand and FNB, they've been smart enough to keep them entirely separate.
Well, they lost a lot of money, 2007 or thereabouts, on proprietary trading they did within RMB. So, yeah, they've learned some expensive lessons. How big a deal is Brexit to the City of London, this financial epicenter of global banking?
Oh, it's devastating. It's devastating. I think that people were complacent. They took it for granted that the vote would be to remain. I think it's going to do enormous damage to the City of London. Now, personally, I think over the next couple of years that a way will be found to keep Britain in a special associate status, or maybe somehow within a reformed European Union. But in the meantime, you know, the banks and the other financial institutions are not waiting around. Already, for example, some of them have announced moves of quite substantial activities to places like Dublin. Dublin is going to be a major beneficiary of what's happened, and in fact, they're not really prepared in terms of the housing requirements that are going to come along with this. But Dublin, to some extent, Paris, I think, will benefit, but it's too legalistic a jurisdiction, good as the food is and all the other good things about Paris. I think, you know, Frankfurt is not the world's most exciting place to go. I think Amsterdam has some potential, and if only Scotland could remain within the European Union, Scotland, Edinburgh would be a great place as well.
I'm watching the Scottish National Party very closely on that particular point, as to they see an opportunity and to turn themselves into a financial powerhouse. There is that opportunity. We've got two South African banks which have got big stakes up for grabs. Barclays looking for a buyer for APSA, or Barclays Africa, and Old Mutual for Nedbank. 10 years ago, global banks would have been queuing up to snap up big stakes in these smaller operations. Is that even an option anymore? Is anybody interested in buying emerging market banks at the bottom tip of Africa, yeah, regardless of how good they are?
Yeah, well, look, the way you put the question, Bruce, gives the impression, or would lead one to give an answer that would give the wrong impression. The truth is that the big banks of the world are in a desperate mess. The British banks have never been in such an appalling state as they are today. Similarly, the big American banks. Similarly, the big German banks. Germany's had a perpetual banking crisis for as long as I've been, you know, working in the banking, or working with the banking industry, the last 30 or something years. Some banks going bankrupt, you know, four or five times, you know, over that period of time. So where are these banks going to come from? I think it's a different story altogether. The really exciting thing is that a fantastic bank, in this case, two fantastic banks, but in this case, let's say Barclays Africa, is freed up from this really sort of negative influence that could only have been a negative influence that came from Barclays PLC, and actually now can get on with the business of building an African banking powerhouse. So I think this is fantastic news for the employees and the shareholders of the new shareholders of Barclays Africa. I think Nedbank is a sensational bank as well, and I think this great potential to come from its alliance with Ecobank.
Mm. No, he knows the banking sector. Does Michael Lafferty? He knows the African banking sector, the global environment too. He's been involved for 30 years. The Lafferty Group, they rate the global banks, and they are the guys who said the South African banking sector is the best in the world. But in that, Capitec and Barclays Africa emerged as the best. Some criticism of the methodologies and all of that sort of stuff, but Michael Lafferty explaining it very clearly to us this evening. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Bruce.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Markets today, what an extraordinary week it's been. Garth Curry from Sanlam Private Wealth. If I'd promised you 52,000 on the All Share Index this time last week, you probably would have bitten my hand off and said, I'll take it, whatever you want, give me, I'll give it to you. You would have been very happy to have 52,000 by today.
Good evening, Bruce. It's a phenomenal rebound this week that we've had, yes.
Explain it, please.
We saw 6.5% fall down Friday and Monday with the uncertainty of Brexit, because I don't think anyone was anticipating that sort of action. And when they realized that we weren't seeing major redemptions, and we were also getting most of the banks coming out and giving underlying support, people started to buy back into these markets. So we've rallied most of that and finished the week up about 1.4%. And also, it also stopped, of course, potential of interest rates in the U.S. possibly going up. And, you know, people are worried that the interest rates now might have actually have to come down maybe by the end of the year in the U.S. In anticipation of that, commodities have had a good bounce. And we've seen the pound come off. So a lot of the stocks that were with costs in pounds but generating revenue outside of that, we've had a nice rally, and those companies have had a good bounce. So it's been resources and companies that are generating revenue outside of the U.K. area.
A big recovery, not only here, but across world markets. And the FTSE 100 has had its best one-week performance, plus 7.2% since 2011. But it's the FTSE 100. It's these globally diversified companies, companies that benefit perhaps from this weaker pound that we've seen this week.
Correct, Bruce. Especially, I mean, your mining sector has had a phenomenal run. The gold shares, as you've seen, have had a tremendous run. And British Tobacco is one of the better performers this week, having not come down much. Unfortunately, it's also had a negative effect on some of the stocks that are, for instance, property in the UK, some of the financials in the UK, as mentioned by Mike, your previous speaker, that are taking a bit of strain in this space because, you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty. Even though it's bounced up dramatically, we've got until October to wait to see what happens in the UK and what the Eurozone does with us.
I mean, some very serious people this week have been talking about the possible recession in the United Kingdom. The governor of the Bank of England yesterday was talking about the possibility of cutting interest rates in the next couple of weeks to stimulate the UK economy. I mean, this Brexit vote, for all of its nationalistic pride and chest beating and political excitement, has potentially negative economic ramifications for years ahead. And there are some very serious forecasts that this is the beginning of the return to Thatcherism and to isolation of the British economy. I mean, these are pretty serious issues with which the UK is going to have to deal in the next couple of years if it chooses to follow through, of course, with its Brexit threat.
Correct, Bruce. I mean, this creates a lot of uncertainty. So I think you're seeing the markets have rebounded sharply from the fall of 6.5% and rallied and probably overbought some of the stocks that they've sold. But the uncertainty is still there in global markets. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty globally. What happens with the Eurozone from this? Do other countries follow and have referendums or decide what happens with the Eurozone on this? What happens in the UK between Scotland and as well? Because they would well have to have stayed in. There's many, many uncertainties that are going to unfold over the what happens to U.S. interest rates and the U.S. economy with elections coming up here and, of course, in the States at the end of this year in November. A lot of that there's so much uncertainty that you've got to keep your fingers, some cash dry at this stage, and I think you've got to maintain a defensive mode in this market.
But we've seen one of the key beneficiaries of this great uncertainty is the surge that we've seen in the gold price. And we would expect that. Uncertainty should push the gold price up, and it's been brilliant in the first half of the 2016 year for gold shares. But please explain the massive rally in platinum. Platinum isn't a metal that people invest in. It's an industrial metal. You put it into autocatalytic converters. You might buy somebody some platinum jewelry, but you don't go and buy platinum bars in the same way as you might buy a gold bar or a gold coin.
The holding, Bruce, it's a, you know, we've seen, as you mentioned, it's, you know, it's a usable commodity rather than a precious metal like gold. And gold's almost seen as a 28th currency, as a protection metal. But the US dollars, all the commodities have been running. We've seen oil recover slightly. We've seen silver jumped up 4% today. And platinum started to bounce up, nearly 2.8% up in some of these platinum shares. Platinum has been so depressed for nearly 3 years now, and has slowly started to recover. I mean, it's only just over $1,000 an ounce. It was a lot higher than that 3 years ago, but it came down to well below $1,000 and has now gone just above it. And that trend turn on the platinum price has definitely created some people to get back into platinum in addition to gold. So gold's had a good run, now platinum starting to follow through with it, and silver. And we've seen some of those platinum shares bounce up quite dramatically with Impala up 9% today, and I think Northam as well. But we've definitely seen some demand again on the platinum front to follow the gold side. So let's hope it continues for the South African market, because that helps us with our currencies and demand for South African shares.
We've seen a lot of really, all of this bad news, a lot of it has been really positive for South Africa in the short term. My question to you, and it's the impossible question, so let me ask it, how sustainable are these benefits for the South African economy to help us keep interest rates low, to help improve our trade numbers, to help us improve our current account as the rand strengthens a little bit and the pressure is lifted off the Reserve Bank to raise interest rates this year?
Currently, it's definitely helping, Bruce. It's a very difficult question to answer because there's lots ahead of us, lots of noise perhaps ahead of our election on the 3rd of August. And we've also got to, you know, our commodities are definitely helping our exports. If the commodities pick up, we're seeing, you know, the same tonnage going out, but they're at a better price. So that's helping the balance of payments, which is helping the current account deficits. And that is definitely helping us on South Africa and getting revenue into our coffers from the exports that we're generating. But it's not just as easy, that there's many other factors in the economy that are being affected on this.
Most certainly are, but I'll take a little bit of good news this week.
Bruce.
Garth Curry from Sanlam Private Wealth, thank you very much. Another big story on the day we didn't touch on, but let me mention it. The former Tiger Brands chief executive, Peter Matlari, he has been a non-executive director at Barclays Africa for the last 5 or 6 years. He's now, today, been appointed deputy chief executive of Barclays Africa with responsibility for the bank outside of South Africa on the rest of Africa. So his job is to grow the rest of Africa business. The finance director, Dave Hodnett, is keeping his responsibility for the South African operations of Barclays Africa. And Peter Matlari, he takes over as effectively the deputy CEO responsible for Africa for Barclays Africa. It's an interesting appointment for Peter Matlari, who left Tiger Brands toward the end of last year.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield.
Thanks, Eric. Back with Sports Talk coming up in about 20 minutes' time here on 702 and Cape Talk. Time now for the best bits of the Money Show. It's where we take the best bits of the Money Show, chop them into smaller bits, and play you some extracts. The idea being that we want to encourage you, if you miss bits of the Money Show, or simply want to listen to them once again, go to our podcast. You can get those podcasts via our website. You go to the Money Show page on either the 702 or the Cape Talk websites, or even easier, go and download the app, the radio station app, go look for the Life button, click on that, and our podcast will miraculously appear. You can subscribe to the podcast like lots of people do and listen in your own time. Now, let me give you some tidbits from the week. One of my favorite stories of the week is an extraordinary tale of how Exclusive Books is battling the airports company South Africa for right to do business at O.R. Tambo International Airport and at Cape Town International Airport. There's a serious story of potential skullduggery at play if you listen to Benjamin Trisk, managing director of Exclusive Books, explaining the threat to the stores at the airports. Plus, we had a call from the executive head of corporate affairs at AXA just to spice things up.
Amber Trading is a company that was, it seems as though it was set up specifically to bid for the site that we occupy at OR Tambo International. And its shareholders are a shareholder in the CNA at Airports brand, which operates at OR Tambo International, also OR Tambo Domestic, and another lady who I've not encountered. It was set up 2 days before the tender was released.
But you've actually been issued with eviction notices, which the South Gauteng High Court has ruled on. What is your legal status then within the airports?
Well, we continue to occupy the premises on a month-to-month basis, given that the judgment of Dodson AJ in the South Gauteng High Court ruled against AXA on the eviction notice. AXA applied for leave to appeal that judgment, which is a recorded judgment, by the way. And we're now set down to hear argument on September the 12th before a full bench in the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein.
It is not, remember, AMCA Trading in a special purpose vehicle, yeah. So I don't think it would be fair to then say it's one company.
Okay.
You know, they went out of their way to form this vehicle to, and they competed equally for the tender and they were awarded.
So when we look at the Supreme Court of Appeal, if you lose there, does Exclusive Books retain a 5-year contract to keep trading at the airport, or do you find do you take this further?
We are a responsible company, and if a court pronounces otherwise, we will abide by the ruling of the court.
That was the Airports Company South Africa spokesperson, of course, speaking. Also, Benjamin Trisk, the chief executive of Exclusive Books. Warren Ingram, our financial advisor on the Thursday night, Tame Financial Advisor from Galileo Capital, talking about what the one thing that you should do if you are a young person between 20 and 45, and I would argue maybe even a young person who's slightly older than that in years. What is the one thing that you should do before anything else to increase your chances of creating long-term wealth?
And it might sound really simple, but there's a bit of depth to this. The one thing would be to invest in your own human capital. So if you're 25, let's say, you're starting out, unless you've inherited a lot of money, what you've got is yourself, and you've got a lot of time, and you've got a brain, hopefully, but you probably don't have much in the way of assets. So the one thing you have got, more so than someone who's 65, is a lot of human capital, because you've got the ability to earn a huge income stream over a long period of time, and you can grow that income stream far above inflation if you do well with your human capital. So the point here is invest in yourself, invest in your ability to generate a sustained and sustainable income stream.
That's Warren Ingram with financial advisor at Galileo Capital. Now, this week was week of pay back the money. On Monday, everybody wanted the FTSE to pay back the money, and it did. The FTSE 100 had a spectacular week after the blowout on markets on Friday and Monday, and it was up 7.2% on the week. So it fulfilled its end of the bargain, and it paid back the money. Then we saw the National Treasury this week come out with its determination of how much it believes the president should pay for a portion of the non-security security features at Encanta. It's been massively controversial. So we asked David Lewis, Executive Director at Corruption Watch, what he thought about the 7.8 million rand bill, which the President and the Constitutional Court separately are pondering as to whether or not it's an appropriate level of recompense.
For those who think it's too little, that may partly be a consequence of the manner in which the Public Protector calculated what it was that he was liable for, and it may be that the Constitutional Court understood its mandate too narrowly. But I think the fact is that even if he'd been ordered to pay 80 million rather than 8 million, there would have been a hell of a lot of South Africans very disappointed with that, because, you know, frankly, a huge swathe of South Africans believe that the president is on the take. And it's not only around Nkandla, whether it's around, you know, cars for his wives, aeroplanes for his comforts, his friendship with the Guptas, they believe that this is a president who has plundered public resources, and so they're not going to be satisfied with it, and that's the consequence of this kind of conduct.
That's David Lewis from Corruption Watch. Finally, let's just wrap up the best bits of the Money Show for the week with Sibo Sisovelani. What a nice guy. The mountaineer who came dressed like an investment banker. With honor, though. Sibo Sisovelani climbs mountains for a living. He's done well. The guy who was once a goat herd. He became a game ranger. And then he got into mountain climbing. He's now a guide for people, and he takes them all over the world to some of the world's most inaccessible places. On our Make Money Mondays personal edition, he's talked about his first memories, did Sibo Sisovelani, of money.
I probably never knew what money was up until about when my grandmother had the faith in sending me to a grocery to buy. And the way she did it was in this way. She would put a few coins in a handkerchief, and because she feared I could lose it, tie it on my wrist and then say, "No, non-stop, go all the way to the grocery shop." And then I got there, stretched my hand over the counter, and then untied, the shopkeeper untied, and then checked what is in there, and then says, "What do you want, sir?" And then I would say whatever that was. If there was any change, did the same deed again, tie that back, and then I would run back home. So that tells you it was a long, long time ago, before I could even count from 1, 2, 3 up until 10.
There we go, Sibo Sisovelani. He's counted many more steps since then, of course. Mountaineer, adventurer, and a guy, all right, nice guy. Sibo Sisovelani, the mountaineer, wrapping up the best bits of the Money Show this week. If you want to hear more of those bits, the extended interviews, or just simply find out what happened on the Money Show this week, go, the easiest way is go to the app, the radio station app, go to the Life button on the app and listen to the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast. Become part of the family of Money Show listeners. Time now for the brutal biz quiz, the one and only biz quiz with MTN, the only biz quiz that gives you 2,000 rand if you are the one and only whiz of the brutal biz quiz on a Friday night. Which mountain's summit is an international border between China and Nepal? There ain't no mountain high enough, but this one is. Which mountain summit is the international border between China and Nepal? You give us a call. Nepal on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. If you want to play tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz and be in line to win 2,000 bucks.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on The Money Show.
2,000 rand up for grabs. Which mountains form the international border between China and Nepal, Reggie?
The Himalayas, Bruce.
Himalayas, absolutely right. On this week's Make Money Mondays feature, mountaineer Sibo Sisovelani was telling us about his relationship with money. He climbed one of those mountains very successfully in the Himalayas, Mount Everest. Which economic and political union consists of 28 countries?
The European Union.
Which economic and political union will consist of 27 countries within the next 2 years? It'll still be the European Union. Which company is Carlos Brito the chief executive? Of which company is Carlos Brito the chief executive?
Carlos Brito.
Yes, rhymes with Frito. 3, 2. Reggie, you're going to kick yourself. I'm sorry, but you have to go. It is the Brutal Biz Quiz, of course, the only Brutal Biz Quiz in the world. So who wants to play the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening? I'd like you to be the player. We've got a question up for grabs. Which company is Carlos Brito, the chief executive? You give us a call on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Coming to a fridge near you pretty soon.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
There's 2,000 up for grabs, and we've got a couple of questions to go, and Kelly is going to have a go at answering those questions. Of which company is Carlos Brito the chief executive, Kelly?
AB InBev.
AB InBev is absolutely right. The Competition Tribunal giving the AB InBev takeover of SAB Miller the thumbs up yesterday, but T's and C's do apply. Which food company did Peter McClare run before being appointed today deputy chief executive of Barclays Africa?
Oh, no,
stumped. Oh, Kelly, thank you for playing. Thank you very much indeed. I'd like to talk to Tricia, please. Tricia, which company did Peter McClare run before today's job?
Barclays.
Tiger Brands is absolutely right, Tricia. Which South African bank was named top-rated bank in the world by Lafferty Bank when it did its quality ratings earlier this year, the Lafferty Bank quality ratings?
Capitec.
Ooh, Tricia, you've been listening. You've been listening. Now, here's a tricky one for you. Which number has exclusive books used for Yonks in its logo? Think about the exclusive books logo. Think what it looks like. There's a number in that logo. Which number do they use?
I was listening and I didn't hear anything.
Oh, no, but see, that wasn't included in the show. It is a number. Pick a number.
Number one.
Why would they use number one, Tricia? Because they use it as the instead of the I, they use a number one. You got lucky, Tricia. Well done to you. You are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. You get 2,000 ones coming your way, 2,000 rand coming your way. The book retailer in a battle with the Airports Company of South Africa to keep trading there, of course. And the number one in the exclusive books logo is in place of the I. They put a one in there instead. When you're going growing a small business, meetings, telecoms and admin move into dinners, recitals and bedtime stories. MTN Business knows that between the successes and failures, the courage to continue is what counts. It's their business to know that the right meetings, telecons and admin mean better dinners, recitals at better schools and bedtime stories that last a lifetime. MTN Business has advisors, products and solutions that enable you to do so. Go to mtnbusiness.com/ZA to grow your business today. That's it from The Money Show for today. That's it from The Money Show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for playing. Well done to Tricia for being the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. And we'll look forward to chatting again on Monday, no doubt. It'll be an equally eventful week. Exactly what will happen, I don't know. Other than Tim Noakes joining us at 7:30. Make toast for him. We'll have a toast with Tim Noakes on Monday. Till then, bye-bye.